A lot of them are saying right now that the reason that you want to get into Social Security, that you want to get into all of these different, into Treasury and things like that, is that you're looking for personal information and you're trying to make more money.
Yeah.
I've never met anybody as rich as you that cared less about money in my life. Every time I hear a story about you, you're sleeping on a couch of some other guy in a city that you could buy the entire thing.
Yeah, I'm not... I'm
I don't
not.
Think you care about money, do you?
No, actually, But, I mean, listen, like, if I steal some Social Security, I can finally buy nice things.
Yeah.
You know? All right, CD Reels with you. That was a really fun moment on the stage at CPAC, and we just returned, so I'm a little delayed in getting out these podcasts to you, but we have a lot of great interviews to share with you. But in the CPAC audience, we were there when Javier Milei actually brought the chainsaw out to Elon Musk, and he lifted it about the stage. It really was a funny moment. And Rob Schmidt was the one that interviewed him. And I really love Rob on Newsmax. So it was fun to hear him interview Elon. I think he was a little bit nervous. But that whole thing, I just wanted you to hear how Elon is responding to these accusations that he's trying to make money. He's kind of trying to get into people's, you know, personal files in the IRS so he can, you know, I don't know, have access to their money. It's really funny. And you heard Elon's response, you know, making it funny for all of us. What an unusual guy he is. And I'll come back to, I have a few more clips of Elon on stage that I'll get to in today's podcast. Well, this is Sandy Rios and Sandy Rios 24/7, and we love hearing from you. Love it. So call us and leave a message at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can write me at sandy@afr.net. Love reading what you write, sandy@afr.net. You can find us on any social media platform that you like, because we all have our favorites, and some of us, you know. Anyway, we're there, and you can find the show and other things that might be interesting to you. Also, you can listen to the show at sandyrios.com. That's the website, and that's really simple. But, of course, we're on any podcast platform that you prefer, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, whatever you listen to. And you can also listen, of course, on our home base, which is home base for many of you on the American Family Radio Network. It's afr.net, afr.net. Well, when a woman experiences an unplanned pregnancy, she often feels alone and afraid. So many times her first response is to seek out an abortion. But because of the generosity of listeners like you, that search may lead her to a preborn network clinic where she will choose life, not just for her baby, but for herself. Preborn offers God's love and compassion to hurting women and then provides a free ultrasound to introduce them to the life growing inside them. This combination brings the ultimate miracle of life to life, which is why Preborn sees an average of 200 babies saved every day. Meet some courageous women who choose life. Here's a courageous woman who chose life. Her name is Maddie. Maddie was in a tough situation as she wasn't sure who the father was. But after receiving counseling, prayer, and a free ultrasound at Preborn Network Clinic, everything changed. Maddie discovered she had twins and found the strength she needed to choose life. Her sorrows turned to joy. And that's because of you. And so that's Maddie's story. We're going to bring you some other stories in upcoming podcasts. Your tax-deductible donation, $28, provides one ultrasound, and of course, you can, you know, give any multiple of that, any a multiple whatsoever. All you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy. Some of you are regular givers to Preborn. I know that because they see the numbers and they know that my listeners really do care. And so it's preborn.com/Sandy. If you're a new listener or you've never given before, it's really simple. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. So CPAC was a great time of rejoicing. I have to tell you, it was just the most wonderful event. The speakers were fabulous, and just anybody that you could name who is in the conservative movement or fighting was there. I'm sure there's some exceptions, but most everyone was there, and they were on the stage, and we were just rejoicing. Now, not everyone is a Christian, so they rejoice differently, but Today we're going to concentrate on the J6ers because there were several of them at CPAC. And Julie Kelly was speaking on the stage. And, of course, this is her. Well, I feel like it's mine, too, because I have cared because I do care. That sounds so shallow. About the J6ers, but I do care. And so it's kind of it was a wonderful interaction with Julie as we kind of celebrated together that these guys are finally free. And that's what we're going to talk about today on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
That's what I'm hoping. It's just a copy, but this is my certificate of pardon from President Trump, and I literally want to get him to sign it. I want him to sign it.
Of course.
So we got it here, hoping, you know, a pardon's one thing, a certificate was one thing, but I think kind of even more slap you in the face to those who persecuted us is to get him to actually sign it for us. There's only 1,600 of us, so I think you can do it. I think you can do it. So wish me luck. See if I can get it done.
To be free again, you know, it's still, I'm like floating on this high that, you know, just to be out and about and in the real world again, it's still, it's kind of overwhelming, but it's a good overwhelming, so it's not too anxiety or anything like that, but it is just being out around so many people again and being able to do what you want, when you want, eat what you want, buy what you want, you know, it's different, you know, not having to put on Browns or gray sweatpants again, you know, every day. So other than that, you know, it's great to be here at CPAC and meeting all these people and telling the truth about January 6th. So
how long were you in prison?
I was in jail total for 18 months.
In prison,
yes. In
so
federal
you get
prison.
Convicted, right?
Yes. And I went to trial. I got convicted on 8 felonies and one misdemeanor.
How did you feel the moment you found out about it?
Ecstatic. I couldn't sleep. I was literally drinking the last of my jail coffee, you know, my Keefe coffee, and I was waiting to go home, and a bunch of the other J6ers decided they were going to go to sleep at like 9:30 at night, and I was like, I don't know why y'all are going to bed. Like, we're leaving, man. They're like, oh, it's not going to happen until tomorrow. And sure enough, at like 10:30 at night, they came and got us, and we were out by like 1:30 in the morning on the 21st.
Were you at the DC jail?
No, I got arrested on the 6th, and I got let go the next day on the 7th. Praise God to a, you know, constitutional judge and a constitutional public defender, and they let me out on a GPS bond for 3 years, and then I finally had my trial, and I self-surrendered September of 2023.
Well, is that not fun? Is that not thrilling? You know, it's just the small joys in life that really make life joyful. Like when you have a really serious problem, and I know about this, my daughter ends on days in hospitals and sick. The thing that cheered me up, the thing I missed the most was just normal little things. And I think that's what you heard those guys referring to. Well, Julie Kelly, who will be speaking with us in just a second, live at CPAC, is a political commentator. She got her start in Chicago. I didn't know her when I was there, but so we met a few years ago. It's been kind of fun. But she's currently a senior contributor to American Greatness. She writes a blog, by the way, which I highly recommend to you. She's going to start writing about the FBI and the Justice Department now that the J6 situation has been resolved. She is a former political consultant to officer holders and candidates in suburban Chicago. She's the author of two books, Disloyal Opposition, How the Never Trump Right Tried and Failed to Take Down the President, and January 6th, How Democrats Used the Capitol Protest to Launch a War on Terror Against the Political Right. You can find her stuff everywhere, National Review, Wall Street Journal, Roll Call, Forbes, but you probably know that. She's a frequent guest on just about every national syndicated radio program there is, and certainly a frequent guest of ours as well. So with that, we go live, or sort of live, live with me at CPAC with Julie Kelly. Here it is. Julie Kelly, one of my favorites and really my go-to person on J6 has just strolled down the hallway here at CPAC, a meteorologist, and she just got off the stage really not very long ago. You did two panels, didn't you, Julie?
No, just one.
Oh, really?
Just one.
Oh, just one? Okay, so the one I saw was the truth about J6 or something, but I... Okay, you. What did you speak about? Julie, you tell me.
Yes, all right. What did I speak about? Well, I basically just commended, you know, the new administration and President Trump for taking his really bold, courageous, and more importantly, compassionate step of pardoning almost all of the J6ers. I think there are 12 who their sentences were commuted, and they're still looking at those individual cases, but commending him. And just talking about, you know, kind of the surreal nature of 2 years ago being here at CPAC with Kash Patel. We were on a panel together. And then here today, he's going to be sworn in as FBI director.
Which you never know who you're hanging out with. You never
exactly,
know what's going to happen.
Exactly. I'm glad we're friends. So at any rate, and then Chief Steve Sutton. He was the head of Capitol Police on January
6th.
That's
right.
So
he was on with you.
He was, yes. Yes, so, and he's around. I'm sure he would love to chat with you. I saw him somewhere.
Okay, well, that would be great. That would be great.
Yeah.
Did he have any, well, I'll wait and talk to him. Julie, just a question about those 12 or so that are still in prison. Who's tracking them out of the White House? Who is going over their cases and trying to kind of see if they also need a pardon?
So the 12 who are still in prison or the 12 who were commuted, their sentences were commuted because those were J6ers who were not pardoned, but they were let out of prison, some who were. But the ones who are still in prison now, I'm not familiar with their cases. There is, I believe that there's outstanding charges either predating January 6th or something unrelated to the events of January 6th, which covers that's the nature of the pardon. So I'm not super familiar with those cases. Just been hearing from so many J6ers who are so glad they finally have their freedom and exonerated in a way and coming forward and telling their own stories.
You know, one of the things that this J6er I know you did cover, it's the Chris who had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Chris Worrell.
I just talked to him week before last.
Okay.
And he was just talking about his concentration right now. What he wishes he could be heard about is the treatment in prisons. Are you hearing that too? Some of the guys wanting to, I know some of them probably don't want to talk about it, but do you see something there? I mean, like, don't you think that would be valuable? And who do you think that they should be talking to, a congressional committee or...
Right. So it's interesting because some J6ers, a few women I know who were inmates, became prison reform advocates after spending time in a federal penitentiary because they can't believe, of course, the J6ers were treated very poorly, but really all inmates are. I mean, these are very dangerous institutions for everyone who's there. And so some of them have come forward and wanted to work on prison reform. So that would begin the Bureau of Prisons. I believe it's under the Department of Justice. But yes, congressional committees. And actually, Sandy, it's a good way for kind of the left and the right to come together.
It's true.
And find some common ground because, as you know, this has been a rallying cry of Democrats for decades. All of a sudden, then it was J6ers and they didn't care. You know, throw them in a gulag, starve them, it doesn't matter. But I do think there might be some common ground there, and I know that there are J6ers who would like to participate in that.
Well, you know, President Trump actually did try to breach the gap. In 2016, when on criminal justice reform, maybe it wasn't quite the same thing, but that was very controversial when he did that.
The First Step Act.
Yeah. So, you know, I was not too sympathetic to it at the time. I have to tell you, I wasn't. Because I didn't know what I didn't know. But I know a lot more now, and I hope that we can do something. You know, now that this is over for you, J6? Is it like, there's the book, close the cover and I'm done. I did that stuff. And you did it beautifully, by the way.
Thank you. I mean, to an extent now, the court proceedings obviously are done.
Yeah.
The new DOJ, President Trump's DOJ, shut down what was called the Capitol Siege Unit of the DOJ. There's a new Ed Martin, our friend, who is a D.C. U.S. attorney. So, you know, shifting the focus from that to real actual crimes committed in Washington. So as far as the coverage of that, yes, I'm still, you know, in touch with J6ers, and I'll be covering some of their stories. But again, now they feel the freedom to go out and meet, you know, talk with people like you and other platforms to tell their story. But I think shifting gears, I'm going to be focusing on what's happening in the DOJ and FBI right now, the reforms that are underway, the investigations that are underway, and some of those are related to the events of January 6th. So I will be covering that. There's a lot. You know, there's now a separate J6 committee. Speaker Mike Johnson formed this select subcommittee. Barry Loudermilk now moved from administration to House Judiciary. So he's going to be continuing to uncover and unravel a lot of what really happened that day.
Looking back on it, let me ask you some mysteries and see if they ever got solved, because I'm not sure. The pipe bomb.
Right.
The pipe bomb. The pipe bomb. What's the? They have a picture of the person, but they still don't know. Then I heard maybe they do know. So whoever they is, does someone know? Besides his mother.
I mean, someone knows either who that individual was. You're talking about the person on the video January 5th, the night before, in the hoodie and Nikes, who was lurking around the RNC and the DNC that night, which is where the alleged devices were found the next day. So was that really the pipe bomber? Was that just someone who was wandering around doing something else, and the FBI used that footage as a reason to open this investigation and a $500,000 reward, et cetera? But again, Barry Loudermilk's committee and Tom Massey as well has been really on the pipe bomb issue, and I've been covering it, Darren Beatty and others. But how could you possibly have all of these government resources, surveillance tools, investigative tools, and still not know who that individual was? So my guess is this is towards the top of Kash Patel's list. But there's also been some misrepresentations by FBI officials about that investigation itself. So, yes, we're going to find out.
Those bombs were not even
that.
Operative. They were like
not.
Dummy bombs. Yeah. So,
they were not.
Okay, well, so, all right, so as you look at Cash taking, he's probably taken the oath yesterday.
I think he does at the White House today at 4 o'clock, I believe.
Okay. What are the things that you look forward to him doing? The things that you think, oh, I can't wait till he does X, Y, or Z?
I can't wait till he fires a lot of more FBI agents. Of course, they've already cleaned house there a little bit, getting rid of the chiefs of the Washington field office, the most corrupt field office in the country, obviously, the Miami field office, both of those offices involved in the armed raid of Mar-a-Lago. I believe the New Orleans FBI chief was dismissed, of course, that individual on vacation on New Year's Eve during the terror attack. And then there were some other chiefs who were dismissed as well. But I think that you're going to see a lot more dismissals. Especially after Acting Deputy Attorney General Emil Bove asked for that list of FBI employees who touched J6 cases, and that, of course, is in the thousands. And that's under a court order right now that those names cannot be disclosed. But there were serious abuses there, and every employee who was involved, especially the FBI agents who participated in raids of Americans for nonviolent offenses, or who were corrupt in the overall investigation, or who lied as witnesses during J6 trials, that has to be a whole separate investigation, and that has to result in massive firings and quite frankly, consequences for those agents who broke the law, or at the very least broke their duty to administer the Constitution and fairly execute justice and the rule of law, because that's not what happened, as we know.
Julie, you probably remember that my husband is a retired FBI agent. He gave his life to that, loved it, proud agent who, you know, actually did what old FBI agents used to do and upheld the law, took the, you know, swore an oath to the Constitution. And so this is hard for him. But, you know, the mission of the FBI used to be fighting crime. You know that. As it started, you know, out of the communists getting, starting to bomb things in the 30s. And then it stayed that way. It was bank robberies. It was, in, you know, interstate crime and things like that. All kinds of kidnappings. And mob stuff, and that's what they did, drugs, gangs, all of that.
Right.
But then 9/11 changed everything, and it was Mueller who declared that they were going to start doing, you know, like, I don't know what to call it, international things where they talk about, suddenly they're supposed to be experts on Islam, at, you know, and all the names in Islam, and they were out of their depth. Not some of them were experts who were wonderful. But they actually were forced to retire soon after that. So then the mission is different. I think it would be really interesting. I'm assigning you to something because you have nothing to do. But I think it would be interesting to kind of speculate or be able to quantify how many crimes, not crimes specifically, but areas of crime like child trafficking, they dropped that to do J6.
Right.
To just see what they didn't do. Those gangs, the Venezuelan gangs in Colorado. Anyway, that would be a really... Maybe you've written about it. Have you?
I mean, there are whistleblowers who have come forward, only a tiny handful, to say that they were reassigned from, you know, child sex trafficking cases to January 6th. I mean, we know that that's the case. We know that all 56 field offices were involved in January 6th. They devoted tremendous resources, not just at the FBI, but DOJ, U.S. attorneys across the country who were brought to Washington away from handling crime in their certain jurisdiction to take on this massive, unprecedented caseload. So, yes, the question is, how did that really jeopardize national security? And, you know, now that this DOJ has prioritized immigration enforcement, I would assume that they'll be looking at how those diverted resources led to what we know was a spike in crime and obviously a massive spike in immigrants coming across the southern border.
It's really shocking. It's like we really weren't being protected by them for the last several years.
Right.
Yeah. The lessons of J6, not the lessons, but as you look back on it, I mean, I have that web of information in my head and a lot of knowledge, more than most people, of course. But where did this start? I know that you wrote a long time ago that whole kidnapping issue with the governor of Michigan was kind of the archetype for what they actually did on J6. But whose idea was this, do you think? Do you have any idea?
That's a good question. I mean, you have to point to the leadership of the FBI, Christopher Wray, who prioritized or claimed that the threat of political violent extremists was a major threat to the country. But back to what you were saying, you know, they had developed all of these tools for the first war on terror, and then of course that was over. Well, you have all of this authority and you've spent, you know, trillions over 20 years investing in this, developing your whole national security law enforcement apparatus about going after foreign terrorists. Well, they're not just going to dismantle that, right? So this was part of Christopher Wray lying, saying that domestic terrorism was a chief threat, so he could justify turning those tools against Americans on the right. And, of course, we saw that with President Trump during Crossfire Hurricane. I mean, that predated Christopher Wray. That was Jim Comey. But they're all the same. You know, they're all of the same stripe.
They're good friends, actually. Mueller, yes. And Comey and... Ray, all good friends.
Yes, that's why they're basically the same person. And Andrew McCabe I would throw in there as well. Yeah. So, and of course the Whitmer Fednapping that the FBI concocted, you know, from start to finish to make it look like domestic terrorists were trying to kill one of Donald Trump's most outspoken political foes. That was all a lie. So that's another thing I hope that Cash looks into. That's actually still in the court system, so something could happen with that. But, you know, he has his plate full, and so does Attorney General Pam Bondi, because the corruption is so deep and so extensive. It is not just the leadership of the DOJ and FBI. This permeates all 93 U.S. Attorney's offices, all 56 FBI field offices, It is going to take years to try to detoxify both of those departments.
Well, we're not done. That's just right up to the point where I'm going to respond to that, and we have more discussions about what she's going to cover next. So I hope you'll stay tuned. That's the Julie Kelly live from CPAC. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift for preborn to save babies in a bigger way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor preborn's entire network for 24 hours. It will help rescue 200 babies. To donate, all you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. And of course, if you don't have that kind of money, and then just give what you can. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Okay, so we were talking with Julie about the corruption that goes so deep, and she was talking about all the U.S. attorneys. Not just the leadership of the FBI or Justice, but we've talked about that many times. And then we'll start this second part of our conversation with my response to her. Here it is. I've probably told you this before, but Bruce, my husband, the latter part of his time at the FBI, he went to polygraph school. So he did polygraphs for criminals, but also for hires, new hires. And he would come home and say to me, I don't know where they're getting these people. They're not qualified. You know, when he got in, it's a very few people actually could get into the FBI, and he was got his law degree so he could get in, and you'd be an accountant or something, but you were a serious
prestigious
person. Yes,
it was a prestigious.
Yeah, you didn't have, you know, drug use in your past and all of the things that they let go now. And Bruce would just be astounded at the lack of character and the things that they would say. And he said, this is going to be trouble later. Mm-hmm. And so here we are. These guys are the ones that are leading now.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, look, we saw that during the BLM riots. I mean, you have the FBI agents, obese, you know, women taking a knee outside of FBI headquarters in brazen defiance of the law. And so... That's to my point that Cash and Pam Bondi really have their hands full, but I know they got great teams around them. And as much as they want to clean up the agency, they really want to get rid of the bad apples, and they want to hold the worst ones somehow responsible for what they've done. You can't just completely destroy the credibility of the Department of Justice, which now, among Republicans, has a 20% approval rating. That's just something you would never imagine. The party of, you know, police and rule of law that views the DOJ so dimly. So that's... Who is that? Oh, hey, Matt! So,
who's kissing me from behind?
I know.
Matt Schlapp.
I know my
just,
husband is.
Matt Schlapp just kissed Julie Kelly. I'm breaking it on Sandy Rios. 24/7.
Yeah. So at any rate, but I think everyone is very encouraged by what they started doing immediately on day one, the president and his DOJ team. They're not going to put up with any resistance.
So Emil Bove, was he the act? Did they call him acting director?
He is the acting deputy attorney general right now. Blanche and Emil Bove were our law partners. Okay. They represented the president in the New York case and also the Florida case, documents case, which you know that I covered as well. So Todd Blanche has to be confirmed by the Senate as deputy attorney general. And then once he is, then Emil will be his, I guess he'll be the number three at the department.
Okay. All right. So you may not know this, but I'm going to ask again. I mean, cash, I just think, I know that building. I've been in it many times at Bruce, the FBI building. He walks in by himself. Does he have a team? Is he bringing anybody with him that knows what they're doing inside that building?
He does have a team around him right now. I'm sure that you know that he's been developing over the past few weeks. So, but you know, Cash is extremely smart. I don't know if you know him, but he's.
I've interviewed him, but I don't know him personally.
Yes, I mean, he was a public defender and a federal prosecutor, so he's been on both sides. Obviously, he was the head of the top staffer on Devin Nunes' House Intelligence Committee, so he's an intelligence background. Yep. He was at the Department of Defense towards the end of the first Trump administration. So, I mean, and he's been a target of lawfare himself, personally. I mean, having his email and Google account subpoenaed and surveilled for 5 years as the government, the DOJ, tried to target him as well. So he has not just a professional agenda, but I'm sure personal vendetta. He would never say it, but how could you not have a because they not only tried to take out Cash, they tried to destroy his boss, Devin Nunes. When that didn't work, they tried to destroy his other boss, Donald Trump. So, this is personal, I'm sure, to him.
But, I don't think of it as vengeance, although perhaps it is. But it's not personal. It is personal, but it's also on behalf of the country. These guys love the country. They make that,
Cash has
made that clear. Elon Musk loves this country.
Right.
These guys love the country. So they may have, Bruce and I have discussed this, I think that it's probably good. I wish they had, there are other people I wish they would have included in the administration who've been really hurt by all of this. Because they've been hurt, they know exactly what to do and where to go.
Right.
So that's a strength, not a weakness. Because who's going to care that much? And who will have knowledge? They'll have so much knowledge about stuff because they would have kept up with it. Let's come back to the J6ers, Julie, because you know that they are destitute. Some are not, but most are.
Yes.
And their families are destroyed, and they can't get jobs even now. What would you think can happen to help them in some way, form or fashion, to restore them?
Yes, I mean, I think that should also be on the table of consideration, either tort claims that are handled by the DOJ for a lot of these individuals. I know there's talk of, civil suits that are going to be filed, like class action with a lot of J6ers. I'm not really sure what that looks like because, of course, everyone has their different charges and different experiences, et cetera. So, this is unprecedented. This is the largest criminal investigation and prosecution in DOJ history. So there's no precedent to look back at, and say, this entire group of people were wrongly prosecuted, imprisoned, destroyed, bankrupted, et cetera. So how does now the new government make that right? So I'm sure that the president has talked about that. I'm sure it's something they're still considering. But, they've got so many crises coming at them,
right.
So many things that they have to fix.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that's towards top of mind, especially for the president, who has met with so many of these families.
Let me ask you one last question. You're writing now. You are expanding. I've noticed that you're writing about other things now. What's got your attention right now?
Well, what's happening at the DOJ and FBI, the reform of those agencies, the inquiries that are ongoing, the DCUS Attorney's Office, the investigation into the unlawful use of 1512C2, the obstruction post Enron that was overturned by the Supreme Court. So there's an inquiry, internal investigation there. The DOJ, Pam Bondi's weaponization working group, where she specifically named looking at FBI agents who abused their authority on January 6th, so I'll be covering that. course, what Cash is going to be uncovering. And then we have the separate J6 committee that's been established. So there's going to be more investigations there. So, you know, I spoke to the president a few days before Inauguration Day. He called me a few nights before. We talked extensively about pardons, and he indicated he was going to issue this blanket pardon. And he said, Julie, I'm sorry, I'm going to put you out of business. I'm going to put you out of work. And I think I've been 10 times busier since. I said, oh, no, Mr. President, I think I'll have plenty to do. Don't worry. And I certainly have. Oh, and of course, Sandy, the other thing I'm following are all these lawsuits that are being filed by government employees against the president and administration. The same courthouse, the same judges who threw all the J6ers behind bars, now, you know, handling those lawsuits and filing temporary restraining orders or preliminary injunctions, right, preventing the president from even firing top officials in the executive branch, saying he didn't have the authority. So, plenty to cover.
There's plenty to cover. One thing that's encouraging to me is that I thought that at this CPAC, because we had such a big win, I was afraid that people would be more relaxed and less fired up. But what you just said is true. It's like, no, that's just like, that lit a fire. This is like a prairie fire.
Yes,
and I think it's exciting. Julie, thanks. I really appreciate you joining me. And
thanks for all you've done, too, Nick, for the J6ers and bringing this to your audience.
Well, you helped me. You brought me into the tribe, and I couldn't not do it. And I know you couldn't either. I'm grateful that you did what you did, and I'm grateful I had a chance to do some things, too. So.
Yes, thank you.
Julie, fellow Chicagoan.
Yes.
Are you still living there?
I am still in the suburbs, yes.
Okay.
Headed back there tonight.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks,
great
Sandy.
Talking to you.
You too.
Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. All right. Well, you were just listening to Julie Kelly coming live from CPAC on Media Row. How much fun that was. And so I started the show today by talking about Elon Musk on stage. And there were a few other things I wanted to share with you that he said that I thought were really interesting. Some of it you will have heard or seen, but I picked out some things that you might not have. Now, I opened the show with that, you know, if they're accusing him of wanting to take money like from Social Security, Medicare, and he says, you know, it's like, if I just could get into that Social Security account, I could buy some nice things. That's basically what he said. But then they have, he and Rob Schmidt have a serious conversation about the whole idea of cutting Social Security and Medicare. And because Elon makes the case of why it's so important that we cut this wasteful spending. Here it is, clip 10.
They're also talking about you guys are going to end Social Security, you're going to end Medicare, you're going to end these things. I don't imagine that conversation has been had with the president, and that's the plan.
No, in fact, the actions that we're taking with the support of the president and the support of the agencies is what will save Medicare, what will save Social Security.
Yeah.
Because if the country goes insolvent, if all the money is just spent on paying interest on debt, there's no money left for anything.
Yeah.
So that's the reason I'm doing this, is because I was looking at the big picture here, and it's like, man, our debt's getting out of control. The interest payments, the interest on the national debt now exceeds the entire Defense Department budget.
It's $1 trillion a year in interest. Just to carry the money that we owe is $1 trillion a year.
Yes.
That is unbelievable.
And rising rapidly. A country is no different from a person. Country overspends, country goes bankrupt. Same as a person who overspends goes bankrupt. So it's not like optional to solve these things. It's essential.
Again, that's the voice of Elon Musk on stage at CPAC. And, I was always taught that a really brilliant person is one who can break down really big thoughts into smaller expressions and explanations to normal minds. And if that's the case, he's got that down. And I wanted you to hear that because we will talk further about this whole notion of cutting Medicare and Social Security. And I'm all in favor, but let me just say that by that, I don't mean I'm in favor of slashing the amounts that people who've worked for years put into the system and are receiving. I'm talking about basically fraud and abuse. And you've heard a lot about that, and we'll get into that at another date. But I just wanted to plant a seed, and I wanted you to hear him explain that in plain language, why we have to cut. We have to cut. Just because we've had an election and we have a new sheriff in charge doesn't mean that we can get out of our debt or that we are not, you know, dying under the burden of this debt. And so I wanted to plant that seed. Now, Elon was really funny because Rob Schmidt then asked him about something else they're accusing him of. And here it is, clip 11.
Russia. There's a huge push from the administration.
Oh, yeah, yeah. People like sometimes like
to end this
say,
war.
Say like, yeah. You know, I'm a bought asset of Putin.
Yeah.
I'm like, he can't afford me.
Yeah. I think you're worth more than Russia.
Think
yeah.
about it.
I like that.
All right, he can't afford me. He is really funny. But now this is something that I don't think you might have heard that on some other outlets, but I even searched for this and couldn't find it. So I went to the whole full-length clip and pulled this because this really was very moving to me and very interesting. So I'm just going to play it. Here it is. This is Elon Musk at CPAC, clip 12.
I've been fascinated by you for a very long time.
Thanks.
I've never seen anybody that can, you know, do so many things at the same time. I mean, you've got the rockets, you got the cars. I've always wanted to ask you, what is it like inside your mind? Like, is it just 1,000 miles an hour? I mean, are you?
Yeah.
Is it just not? I mean, does it ever stop? Do you sleep? How much do you sleep? What's? paint us a picture of inside of the mind of a genius. Like, how do you do all this? Can you answer that question? It's not an easy question. Yeah.
I mean, my mind is a storm.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's a storm, but. But I mean, let me maybe tell you something. Like, you didn't ask the question, but I think it's worth, kind of nonetheless, maybe just elaborating on something, which is, you know, I grew up in South Africa, but my morality was informed by America. I read comic books, you know, played Dungeons and Dragons, and I watched American TV shows, and. It seemed like America cared about being the good guys, you know, about doing the right thing. And that's actually pretty unusual, by the way.
Yeah.
It's like
in the world, it's very unusual.
Yeah, it's not like actually.
Most countries don't do that.
No, they don't.
No.
And so I was like, yeah, you know, you want to be the good. You want to be on the side of good. You want to care about what's right.
So that's
what I believe in, you know. So
I gave you a tough one at the end.
Think about that. He, you know, Rob asks him, "What's it like to be in his head?" He said, "My mind is a storm." I've read it. Now that sounds funny or interesting, but I read in other places that he doesn't sleep very well at all. His mother was talking. I read an interview that she did about, you know, he's tormented by his mind. And sometimes she said he'll be there, but he's not there because his mind is in some other dimension, you know, just wrestling with, you know, whether it's space, trying to get to Mars, or whether it's electric cars or solving, you know, the waste and abuse in the federal government. He's just, his interests are vast. And so it's actually not easy to be a genius. And then he says this other thing comes to his mind that doesn't seem to be related, and yet I think it is. He says that my morality was informed by America. I read American comic books. I watched American television. I saw that America believes in there being a good guy, someone who does what's right, and that's what I believe. I think that's profound, and I think some of you have probably seen, and I am not making a declaration at all. I think we need to pray for him and other people who are in leadership positions in our government right now who do not know, who don't have faith, they don't express it, or they're in a different path, because it's so important that they're doing, they have a heart for truth, all of them. And so you've heard me say this before, if they have a heart for truth, then they can find Jesus. And if they can find Jesus, then they can be 100 times more than what they are. And so so pray for him, because I do believe he's on a journey. He's talked about Christianity, the teachings of it. He has not said he's a Christian, but I do believe he's on a journey. Well, that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed my discussion with Julie Kelly and this stuff from Elon Musk. And we've got a lot more for you in the coming days as we cover what happened at CPAC 25. You can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write me at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on social media platforms. You can listen on any podcast platform, your favorite. Just pick one out, and there we are. And before I go, I want to thank Timothy Plan, because we couldn't do this without them. They teach you how to put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.